And they're off. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing our program. Tom, I think the low, or the high, is one of the lowest, certainly, of the season. We're into, like, the 60s. Is that kind of...
One of our lowest highs?
Yeah, one of the lowest highs. I think it's just has to do with kind of a lot of cloud cover, maybe, or what?
No, well, I would think clearer skies could be the cause of lower temperatures. Well, as long as it stays above freezing, I think I'm okay.
I am okay because I am not in the mood to go out and start covering things yet.
Or scraping your windshield?
No, I'd be perfectly happy if our temperature hit like no high, 32 all the low all winter long, so I didn't have to do all my covering out in the garden. It's the Buckmaster Show as we're off and running on Thursday, the final day of November, November 30th upon us, 2023. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, which is part of our media complex owned by Bustos Media, five radio stations under one roof. This one is KVOI, Tucson's trusted voice for local news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening. You can listen to the program live. And if you aren't listening live, you can actually listen to any of our podcasts of any of the programs, pretty much every program we've done since January 2011. At buckmastershow.com. And our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management for our telephone interviews. All right, let's bring in now Dr. Albrecht Clausen, one of our more popular guests. Try to bring in the professor, the renowned scholar of medieval history, every 4 to 6 weeks. He always has plenty of interesting things to say. Dr. Clausen is a University of Arizona Distinguished Professor of German Studies. He's published more than 100 scholarly books, hundreds of articles and book reviews, along with, I had to revise my intro because he has a new volume of poetry. So that knocks it up to 11 volumes of poetry, 4 volumes of essays, textbooks, including a handbook of medieval studies. He's won many honors, including a very neat medal that he brought in a couple of visits ago. It's the Grand Knight Commander of the Most Noble Order of the Three Lions in recognition of outstanding service to German studies. He is the editor-in-chief of the international online journal Humanities. His recent books include Wisdom from the Middle Ages, The Secret in Medieval Literature, Alternative Worlds in the Middle Ages, and Humanities in the 21st Century, The Meaning, the Relevance of Medieval and Modern Literature. In the fall of 2022, that would be a year ago this fall, he spent a semester in Cairo, Egypt, as a Fulbright scholar. Dr. Clausen with us now on the live line. How are you today, sir?
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be with you and always enjoy the opportunity to reach out from the academic setting to the public and maybe share some thoughts I might have.
Well,
thank you.
Why don't we begin with humanities? There's very little humanity in the world right now. We have two kind of quasi, like mini world wars going on. And you look around and you think, humanity? Humanities? I mean, mm-hmm. Where do we go from here, Dr. Clausen?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of interesting for me, because I am, of course, a scholar, and at the same time, I'm politically very active. You might have noticed I regularly publish letters to the editor. And they're sometimes a little bit provocative. I mean, that's good for the public discourse. But as a scholar in the humanities, I have the fantastic opportunity and to reach out to people of all different ages, and to talk to them about the values of human life. I mean, my teaching range goes from sometimes high schools. I just visited a high school yesterday in Phoenix to talk about German and the Middle Ages, to senior citizens in the humanities seminar here offered by the university. the College of Humanities, and of course our PhD students, our undergrad students, freshman students, honors students, so all kinds of different people. So what is happening there? Yes, there's war. There are horrible wars. There are horrible things going on. That is very tragic, almost, in a way, because people do no longer communicate. But there is always the essence of human existence. And, of course, there are a lot of scientists who do fantastic work, medical scholars. But what we do in the humanities is trying to appeal to the heart of the matter, namely the human being, the creature, the suffering being, the happy one, those who fall in love, those who hate. And we use literary texts that are sort of fictional mirrors, but they are artworks or philosophical texts that allow us to address fundamental concerns in human life. You know, love, God, your individuality, honor, dignity. And in an odd way, as far as abstract as it all might be that we're talking about, we develop thereby answers how, for example, the war between Israel and Palestine can be or could be overcome.
The human experience is what we're talking about, aren't we, when we talk about humanities? Yeah. The human experience. And humanities, from what I understand, the kind of the history of it on in higher learning in the United States really goes back several centuries, doesn't it, Dr. Claassen?
Yeah. So we have, of course, the development of modern departments like English, French, German, Spanish, only really since the early 19th century. But if you go much further back, students have always studied philosophy, religion, rhetoric, logic, grammar, mathematics, and so forth. Music was always a big topic. But the essence of advanced learning is always, I think, to alert us, to sensitize us, to make us to sensitive people, really adults. Adults who understand their impact on life, on other people, learning how to cooperate, to communicate with each other. I mean, if you think about these two wars, ultimately, you could say, is a profound miscommunication, a profound misunderstanding resulting from decades of hatred and so forth. So how do we overcome that? Well, at this point, the world tries to do it with weapons. And we all know what that means because lots of innocent people are dying. So ultimately, neither the First World War nor the Second World War, neither the Vietnam War nor the current wars really solve anything. So because people continue suffering, and we need to approach these things differently. And so we need to bring people together at the same table. I'm not into diplomatics. I'm not a politician. I'm not in the government. But we're addressing fundamental concerns of a young generation. Those I'm talking to will grow up and will understand better what it means to be human. I think that is so profound. What does it mean to be human? And it is much more than money, weapons, power, violence. Being human means you have feelings, you have needs, desires, and you are a spiritual being. So
Dr. Albrecht Claassen is with us, University of Arizona Distinguished Professor of German Studies and Fulbright Scholar. He's with us on our live line. Some might argue, Dr. Claassen, humanities really are not relevant in this day and age of people having their faces in their digital devices, but you would argue, I am sure, and you probably will do so right now, that there has never been a more important time to be in the humanities.
That, on the one hand, is absolutely true, but at the same time, I am not a person who would fight against modern media. I am present in all the various social media, or most. It's just simply a different mode of communication, and we in the humanities must simply learn how to work with those new technologies instead of fighting it. So I use, for example, Facebook a lot. You know what for? I regularly post photos and I write haikus. So that is something I reach lots and lots of people I normally would not reach. And hopefully I delight or lighten up their day a little bit with some ideas that I got because I looked at a beautiful plant.
The haiku is the 11th volume of your poetry, the new volume?
Yeah, that's right. A small little volume. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Could you explain about haiku to our listeners who may not be familiar with it, and why do you think it's important, Doctor?
Haiku is a Japanese form of poetry. It operates very much with a mechanical system. Three lines. The first one consists of five, the second of seven, and the third one of five syllables. You're supposed to address somehow nature, and there needs to be some kind of reflective sequence. And what I then do is adapt it, of course, for our modern use. I try to adapt it by addressing fundamental issues, sort of waking up people, waking up and alerting them to some really important things in our existence. Understanding that we are members of a huge community of this world. And if I can focus on a tiny little moment, a little ant, a little leaf, or beautiful flowers, whatever, and suddenly connect that with war and politics and economics, I think that is then really enormous contribution that really helps us all to become better human beings.
Before we take our first break, could you, hate to put you on the spot here, but could you share a haiku with our listeners to give us just something of the flavor of what you are talking about?
Yeah. So I have a very simple example because I wrote it this morning. I was in the Tucson Mountains and took some really nice photos, I think. I looked at once again at the saguaros and the rocks. And so my current haiku is, and I just read, rocky incline, fall, guardian saguaros, write their hieroglyphs.
Okay.
So, I know, I look at these living creatures, and I'm asking us all, what do they say? They have their own language. Yeah. I need to learn how to listen into that.
Yeah, I like it. All right, we'll take our first break. More with Dr. Claussen coming up after the break. And then coming up, we are going to talk University of Arizona Athletics. Troy Hutchison is going to be joining us a little past 12:30. Troy is our newest contributor to the Buckmaster Show, and we're delighted to have him. He'll be with me in studio. But right now I want to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery. They're getting ready for the holidays. The Danish Kringle sounds like Christmas to me, talking about a Kringle. They are ready for you for the holidays. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com, but more importantly, their location is the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, because if you're out and about near that area, stop by for lunch. Do a great lunch. And, of course, breakfast starts at 6:30. Mona'sDanishBakery.com. More on the Buckmaster Show Thursday edition right after this. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan to the RTA board by December. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Dr. Albrecht Clausen, Fulbright Scholar and University of Arizona Distinguished Professor of German Studies, is with us on the live line. During the holiday season, everybody is very much caught up in the whole Santa Claus persona, Dr. Clausen. Is Santa Claus originally a North American? Is the origin of Santa Claus North American, or does it go back to your homeland in Germany and Central Europe?
Yeah, thank you for this really good question. I'm very concerned about that. Santa Claus is a capitalistic invention to promote consumption. From a religious perspective, there is almost everything about him wrong. I mean, really everything. When we celebrate Christmas, at least when Christians celebrate Christmas, they celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ. Saint Nicholas, Nicholas of Lyra, was a bishop of Lyra. That's modern day Turkey. And he was simply a very kind man and is a worship for his taking care of children, coming normally traditionally on December 6th, and rewarding those who had been good and punishing those who had been bad in preparation of Christmas. So every Christian who knows just a little bit about the basic Christian teaching should understand that Santa Claus has really nothing directly to do with Christmas. We should celebrate Christmas, not Santa Claus.
So are you saying that the origin of Santa Claus really goes back to Turkey?
Yeah, well, after all, Turkey was not Ottoman or Muslim until the 15th century. So the entire history of the New Testament is based on the Christian communities in the Eastern Roman Empire. Everyone spoke Greek at that time. And I mean, now let's say northern Lebanon, southern Turkey, those were Greek Orthodox Christian communities. So the entire New Testament was written in Greek of that time. And so these people knew, of course, of all the fundamental teachings of Christianity. And this bishop was just one of hundreds of other bishops. People like him, and he's very entertaining, and it's all fun and nice, but in theological terms, it's everything wrong about it. So
was he a a Greek Orthodox origin of what would you would call the Orthodox?
We cannot quite say that because the two churches, the Western Roman Catholic Church and the Greek Orthodox Church, only split really in the 11th century. So the Council of Nicaea, 1054. So at that point, we did not have yet that split. And so there were differences a little bit in ritual or maybe vestments, but not in essence. That only came later. So yes, I simply have Christian communities in those territories.
Is it true, Dr. Claussen, about the Christmas tree that before the middle of the 19th century here in the United States, nobody even had Christmas trees? Is that correct?
Yeah, so Christmas tree was basically an invention of Martin Luther. So, or as we say in English, Martin Luther, so the Protestant reformer. And in a way, it is a very ancient pagan ritual with the green of the needles brought back into the house and then sort of the whole pagan notion of rebirth, which was pre-Christian, and the Christians then simply subsumed all that in their own teaching. You know, bringing life out of the winter into your home. So that's really a tradition that started in the 16th century. But there is actually much more to it, which is so interesting because in the German and Dutch and Scandinavian tradition, there's always the four Advents, the four Sundays before Christmas. That every Sunday, then you have an Advent wreath and one candle. Then you have two candles, three candles, four candles, and then comes Christmas. So they're very complex forms of repentance, preparation, joy, looking forward to it. So it's a very complex system, which we normally ignore because everything is subsumed under Santa Claus.
Poor man. Yeah. You know, this is crazy. I've always wondered, you see these the old pictures of the candles on the Christmas tree, and it just seems so dangerous to be lighting candles on a Christmas tree. And I just wonder, wow, there must have been a lot of home fires during that period.
That's a very good question. I can answer that from a very personal perspective because I grew up in a household where we always had a Christmas tree with real candles.
Really?
And actually, absolutely. This was... of course, a little bit dangerous, but we always paid good attention, and we never had a fire. I mean, it is dangerous, I admit, surely. So you put the candles, of course, into a holder, and you always watch that no wax drops down onto the carpet. But I myself have never experienced a fire. There might be sometimes cases, but people are always careless. And it's better, actually, for children, I would say, to be exposed from very early on to certain dangers and being prepared. So this is a very strong tradition. And actually, if you can smell the candles, and then you smell the resin, and you smell the tree, and you have quenched all the candles in the evening, and you come down in the morning, and you have all this pre-Christmas smell. This is an absolutely magic, which we normally cannot experience, particularly not here in Arizona, because it's too warm for that.
Yeah. How about the history, the actual history of the day? Christmas itself was celebrated more, the date itself, wasn't that considered, again, going back to a pagan holiday?
Right. Yeah, so it's a complex matter. It depends on where you grow up and what your local culture might be. In some cases, in our case, it was always Christmas Eve, so going to church first in the evening and then late in the evening unwrapping the gifts. For other cultures, it is the Christmas Day, depending on what is more important for you, the joy for looking forward or the actual day of Christ's birth. But, you know, the irony, of course, is that nowadays people all over the world celebrate that, whether they are Buddhist, So my background, my family background is Buddhist, actually, and they, in Hawaii, and they always celebrated Christmas. And they were certainly not Christians. And I know this is the same thing in Egypt. You mentioned Egypt. I was there last year. And, of course, they had Christmas trees all over the place. And, you know, it's just a wonderful, heartwarming celebration, which people and cultures all over the world happily accept. Whether they're Christians or not.
And then we have Hanukkah, and people have asked me, well, Bill, isn't Hanukkah usually come at the same time as Christmas? No, not necessarily. This year, Hanukkah would be quite early, around the first week, early December. So it does vary year to year.
Yes, it depends on the moon. It depends on the calendar. In other words, same thing with a Christian Easter celebration that changes all the time. It's just a, you know, astronomical situation that things not staying always the same. But in essence, what is much more important, I think, is that both Jews as well as Christians, they have a tradition and place great emphasis on the value of celebrating, of wrapping up the year and expressing thankfulness and expressing friendship and happiness and love. You know, this is happening in all cultures. And so in a way, we can easily invite, as it happens in Tucson many times, invite the representatives of the different religions and churches. And ultimately, they all would agree that they really subscribe to the same values, namely love, happiness, community, in the name of, and then you just cite it.
And the name of peace on earth. Let's hope so. Keep our fingers crossed.
Absolutely. I mean, there have been since 9/11, yep, these interfaith services over the world.
Got to go, Dr. Klassen. Always
Thank
a pleasure.
You very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Have
you.
A great holiday.
Okay.
All right.
Oh, you too. Thank you.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, a Thursday edition, the Friday Focus interview tomorrow, when we'll have take a deep dive into what's going on with the Tucson Fire Department. Chuck Ryan, the fire chief, will be with me, our guest media co-host. We do a guest media co-host on Friday. Looks like it will be Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com. But right now we're going to talk about an incredible story in athletics, and that's Wildcat football. And we'll begin with that after I briefly talk about my favorite place to go for all your Christmas decorating, Green Things. Check it out, Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. They raised 21,000, grew, I guess is the proper word. I guess you raise animals and you grow plants. But anyway, 21,000 poinsettias. And believe it or not, they're going pretty fast. Some groups have spoken for several thousand. So if you want some poinsettias and some great colors that are homegrown, check out Green Things, their 13-acre site. Also home to Zocalo Village, all that wonderful Talavera pottery from Mexico. They have the largest selection of pottery, garden pottery, certainly in the state of Arizona, and I'll go out on a limb and say it's probably the largest in the Southwest, at Green Things, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. For our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Right now we are in studio with Troy Hutchison. Troy is our latest contributor. I'm so proud of the 24 or so folks who are regularly contributing to this program. You can check out Troy's bio and all of our contributors at buckmastershow.com. Troy works for goazcats.com. Hey, Troy, how are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
What an opportune, serendipitous time for you to have kind of joined Go AZ Cats at the start, pretty much the start, right, of this kind of storybook season. Right? It's been about a year or so?
It's been about two years. So I covered Jed Fish's first season with Go Easy Cats. So that was 2 years ago, and then his second season as well. But started covering Arizona football about 3 to 4 years ago.
You know, a lot of people, Troy, were skeptical about Fish and the hire. I think folks feel, a lot of fans, I know I was a regular throughout the whole Tomey years, and Coach Tomey had so many loyal friends in this community, and a lot of people felt he was just not, he didn't get a fair shake from the University of Arizona, and a lot of people left kind of the umbrella under the tent. They left the tent and not go to the games because they felt that, you know, we'd had this succession then of some bad hires. The Fish hire has turned out to be a home run.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because when he was hired, that wouldn't have been my choice. You know, as we were making our list at Go Easy Cats in terms of candidates for the job, I thought it would have gone to Brett Brennan of San Jose State, who is a Dick Tomey
disciple.
And same with Joe Salavea, who played defense line at Arizona and was the Oregon Ducks defense coordinator. I thought those were the two guys that they probably should have gone with and kind of laid the foundation of what Arizona football used to be, which was defense, hard-nosed hitting football, and build from the ground up. And they brought in this guy named Jed Fish. Not a lot was known about him. You know, 14 jobs in 15 years. You're like, okay, does he know what he's doing? Like, how is he going to be as a head coach? You know,
the resume was multi-pages.
Exactly. So he came in, though, and to his credit, he brought in a lot of football alum in terms of Ricky Hundley and Chuck Cecil to be on the staff. And he reached out to the alumni. He reached out to the high schools around Arizona. And that's something that really hadn't been done since the Mike Stoops era. I think there was a huge disconnect with high school football in Arizona, not only in Tucson, but just the state, to the Arizona athletic program. That really hadn't been there since Mike Stoops, and he made those connections, brought in transfers like Gunnar Maldonado, like Drake Anderson, who played at Chandler. He brought in guys that had played at different high schools in Southern Arizona and in Arizona in general. And it kind of laid the foundation and the groundwork for recruiting for Jed. And now you've seen him be able to go into Chandler, be able to go into Hamilton, pull some of the best players there. And then him and his staff, it's a tremendous staff. You know, now Coach Johnny Nansen as the defense coordinator. Before, it was Don Brown, who is a well-regarded defense coordinator. Mm-hmm. And they're developing guys, and they're putting them in the right situations, taking a guy like Jonas Savinea from the 22 class. The guy came in at 300 and almost 50 pounds.
Oh, my
goodness. That's a big guy.
350.
They trimmed him down to 320, somewhere in that ballpark.
Muscled him up.
Yeah, muscled him up. And all of a sudden, he's one of the best offensive tackles in the Pac-12. And, you know, he's only in year two, but he's projected to be potentially a first-round draft pick. Same with Jordan Morgan is projected to be a first-round draft pick. You see T-Mac. You see Noah Fifita. You see all these young players contributing and developing. And then they bring in transfers to kind of fill the gap, and you're seeing the foundation of a solid program, which you really haven't seen since the Mike Stoops, Dick Tomey era, mm-hmm. where everything in football starts at the line of scrimmage, mm-hmm. and they're winning the line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, because if you're protecting your quarterback, the good things are going to happen.
Yep.
You know, when you had Jaden DeLora, he was the guy, he was the cover guy for this season. And then he gets hurt, and Noah steps in at the Stanford game and really gives us a glimpse of what was to come. How is Jaden doing, and is he definitely looking? Well, he's probably definitely looking, but is he going to leave?
Yeah, you know, I can't say if he's going to leave or not. It would make sense for him to leave since he does have one more year of eligibility in college football.
He could be a number one guy at a lot of schools.
Yeah, a place like Oregon State, Washington State. I know he was already there. He's not going to go to Washington State. But, you know, places like that really, I think, fit him well. And, you know, you see him on the sideline, and it's not him pouting on the sideline. It's him helping Noah. It's him helping Jed. He's engaged. He's coaching the players up, mm-hmm. and he's helping Noah understand the situation out there on the field. Even though Noah's done a great job and is a highly intelligent quarterback, Jaden's seen more games.
Yeah.
So he knows what to look for, and it's helped Noah along, and they're pretty good teammates, and they help each other out, and you see him working towards, you know, becoming that good teammate, and that's only going to help him if he does enter the portal. Again, I would assume, can't say he will because we don't know yet, but if he does, a lot of programs are going to want a leader like that.
Okay, so you had Jed Fish, a good hire, definitely. What built this program? Good recruiting. Did the transfer for portal help? Mm-hmm. What happened over these last, what was the big picture, Troy Hutchison?
The big picture for Jed Fish was building a program that started in the middle, going back to the roots of Arizona football, which was defense and a steady ground game. You look at Arizona this season, Jonah Coleman, Michael Wiley, DJ Williams, it doesn't matter who they put back there, they're running the football around 150 yards per game. They're defending the run. Last year, they gave up over 209 yards per game on the ground, which was one of the worst teams in the country. This year, they've cut that to 111. And at one point, they were down to 99 yards per game until that ASU game. So they're winning the battle up front. They have depth. They have a system in place where everybody knows what they're supposed to do. Everybody kind of falls in line and is working towards one goal. And you have guys on the coaching staff like Brennan Carroll and a guy like Dwayne Aquina who have years of experience and have been at the NFL level too, especially Coach Carroll, and knows how to get guys to that next level. Same with Coach Fish. He knows how to get guys to that next level. So he always talks about treating the program like the 33rd NFL team. And you're seeing that NFL mindset at the college level working, but also doing it in a college format. I think that's the biggest thing. And a lot of teams talk about wanting to be run like a college team, I mean an NFL team, but then they run it 100% like an NFL team. Mm-hmm. You can't do that at that level. When Jed says he wants to run it like an NFL team, it's the professionalism, how you carry yourself, how you handle yourself on and off the field. And that's what you're seeing. And you're seeing a team going from hoping they're going to win first couple years to, hey, we can win, to, damn, we're going to win football games. Like that's what we're going to do. We're going to go out there and we're going to kick the team's butt and move on to the next opponent. Mm-hmm. There's a mindset change at Arizona, and there's a mental switch, and you're seeing the culture of the program change over.
So normally, if there was not a conference change, mm-hmm. Folks would be looking ahead to where this team, this football team, would potentially fit into, like a Pac-12 situation in the 2024 year. This is a hybrid, though. Now we're going into a how the Cats, the football program, will fit in with this new culture. What's your take on that?
Yeah, you know, if you looked at last year, you're thinking, okay, maybe they could win 7-6 games in the Big 12.
Right.
But you go into what Arizona's done this year, what they have coming back, what they can get in the transfer portal. Mm-hmm. If coaches don't leave and you keep your staff together, mm-hmm. You're looking at a team without Oklahoma and Texas in a conference. They're gone.
Right.
Oklahoma State's pretty much the big dog. Kansas State and Utah will be there as well. Arizona has a legitimate shot to win the conference next season. I think they'll probably be ranked somewhere in the top three in the Big 12 when the preseason rankings come mm-hmm. out. It wouldn't be a shock to me if they were picked to win the Big 12. Mm-hmm. I don't expect that, but it would not be a surprise. They're going to get first place votes, and you're looking at a team that could potentially win 10, 11, 12 games in the regular season, which is insane to talk about when you're talking about Arizona football.
Yeah, I know.
But you look at the schedule, the home and away, the non-conference, what they have coming back. This is a team that can line themselves up for winning the Big 12 and going to the college football playoffs.
And the new playoff system will be 12 teams? Mm-hmm. How does that work then?
Yeah, it'll be 12 teams. It's going to be expanded. Obviously, all the conference winners will be in. It'll be the top 12 teams in the country. So maybe some, you know, lower level teams like a Tulane, like a Boise State of years past could get in. But your conference title for the power conferences will automatically qualify you. Mm-hmm. Right now, if there is a 12-team playoff today, Arizona would be on the cusp of that. Needs some, you know, situations to play out at being at number 15. But you're talking about a team that if they snuck in at number 12, nobody would be shocked, and they'd be playing Georgia in the first round of the college football playoffs.
Wow.
Now, next year, it's going to look a little different, obviously. They're probably, in my opinion, be a top 10 team at the end of the year. And they're going to be sitting in that, you know, 5 to 10 range and potentially get to be the home team for that. It won't be at home. It'll be at some neutral site bowl game. It'll be interesting to see how that all shakes up, but Arizona's in a great place to be a college football playoff team next year.
All right, Troy Hutchison with us on the Buckmaster Show. He's our contributor on Wildcat Sports. I want to talk about athletics and the financial picture, which is, as we know, has some very problematic situation at the University of Arizona. We'll talk with Troy a little bit about that as we continue on the Buckmaster Show. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority Plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is collected throughout Pima County and averages more than $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We send a lot of listeners over to Silver City. People want to get away, and a lot of people grew up in Tucson, never been over there. It's only about a three-hour drive. The land of enchantment. Great time of year to do some hiking. Take your down vest, because, about 50 degrees, 50 to 60 for the highs. So, yeah, not bad weather over in Silver City. SouthwestNewMexico.org is the starting place to find out about the things to do. A lot of outdoor activities, as you can imagine. Some great places to stay and some great places to eat. New Mexican cuisine there in Silver City is very, very good. SouthwestNewMexico.org. We continue now with Troy Hutchison, our contributor on Wildcat Sports, one of our two dozen contributors on the Buckmaster Show. Troy is with GoAZCats.com. And I want to talk a little bit about the financial situation at the University of Arizona. President Robbins said, yeah, we've got quite a shortfall. I think it's around $250 million. I would characterize that as quite a shortfall. A lot of people point to athletics. Is that a fix, Troy, to save some money, or in the long run, it's not really going to do that much?
You know, everybody loves to point at athletics when it comes to, you know, universities spending money and pit holes and stuff like this. But when you look at it, only so many athletic departments across the country, it's about 10 to 15 actually are in the green from athletics making money. Most universities operate in the red. They're operating below under budget in terms of what they can do and how much money they are spending, especially when you have a football program. Football is
so costly,
very costly, but it's also the biggest money maker. It's going to make you the most money when you're successful.
Sure.
But you got to invest a lot of money from facilities to coaches to training staff to flying to traveling. But Arizona, last time I saw the numbers, and I think it was Michael Lev of the Daily Star that put it out, they spent X amount of money, and they were falling short in terms of being in the red around, I think it was $400,000, $500,000 for the athletic department in terms of the money that they got to spend. So that's pretty good in comparison to
And that's
years.
Not going to get you to $250 million dollar deficit. That's not like a drop in the bucket. We do have, 23 sports that are sanctioned, right, by the University of Arizona. That is considered quite a few, I believe, compared to other comparable universities.
Yeah, it's quite a few. I know ASU has around 20, 25, maybe 28 numbers. They do have more than Arizona.
They have a hockey program.
They have hockey. They have
Not water. That we don't have hockey, but it's not sanctioned by the school.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's a club sport
club.
For the hockey.
Thank you.
They have water polo. They have, you know,
water polo.
Kayaking. So you spend money in weird areas, but the issue is those sports, one, and under the rule of Title IX, you have to have an equal amount of male to female sports. That's just how it has to be. If you add a male sport, you have to add a women's sport as well to equal it out.
Okay.
So when you're looking at cutting, what are you going to cut in terms of the male sport? And the one that comes to mind is track and field, because you both have male and female track and field.
Yeah.
Same with swimming and diving, something like that. But the issue is it's not going to make up $200 million.
No.
You cut beach volleyball, you cut soccer, and they don't have a male soccer team. It's just a women's soccer team.
Mm-hmm.
where is that money going to help you? Because mm-hmm. it's not going to help you overcome that deficit. What it will help you is you can't be upgrading facilities right now, probably. You can't, your coaching pool money in terms of raises and all that, it's probably going to go down a little bit right mm-hmm. now. Mm-hmm. I know they're working out a new contract with Jed Fish, and that's usually through the boosters, helping, you know, the university overcome those obstacles mm-hmm. and make sure that Coach Fish stays in Tucson. So that's a little bit different. But maybe it's travel expenses. Maybe it's scheduling, mm-hmm. Especially for like softball and baseball. Mm-hmm. They're probably not going to schedule a team out in Northeast or in the South right now. No. They're probably going to stay regionally. And
or
maybe
try to stay in the conference.
In the conference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quickly about looking ahead to March Madness. We've got quite, you know, great basketball team. If things continue on the trajectory that we are on, what are some of your thoughts about March, Troy?
I think Arizona will be a number one seed in the West mm-hmm. this upcoming March Madness. Mm-hmm. I know it's very early in the season, but mm-hmm. you look at this Arizona team. To me, this is the most complete roster Arizona's had since Brandon Ashley, Aaron Gordon, Nick Johnson. When Ashley went down with the broken foot, they went on to lose in the Elite Eight to Wisconsin. And in the tournament, you never know what's going to happen.
Right.
You're a bad matchup away from going out. But this is the most complete team I've ever covered at Arizona. This is the most complete team in the past maybe 10 years. There's not a lot of holes. There's a lot of experience. And to me, this is probably going to be a 4-3 loss team during the regular season. So mm-hmm. they're going to be highly competitive. They're going to win a lot of games. They're going to be a number one overall seed. And they have a clear path from, I think it begins in Spokane, the number one seed in the West, to Arizona for the Final Four. Mm-hmm. They have a very interesting road where it goes Spokane, California, Arizona. That's best case scenario for Arizona in terms of having that road.
That's right. So the Final Four is in Phoenix, isn't mm-hmm. it? Wow. Okay. That is a very interesting path. So financially, certainly the University of Arizona is looking pretty good and the attendance for the football was up a little bit, right, this year?
It was up. It's not where Coach Fish wants it to be.
Yeah.
I remember growing up, and I was like 3 years old, but going to the games yeah. when Coach Dick told me that it was there, no matter what the score was or how bad the team was, because there were some down years. The stadium was full.
Oh,
and you
yeah.
can say the same for the Mike Stoops era when he started mm-hmm. getting going. When they were 3-8, 5-6, or whatever the record was, the stadium was full. Mm-hmm. I think they're battling a social thing going on right now. Just the fans aren't what they used to be.
Yeah.
And when you have a TV that you can get 300 something games on the channel, you can stay at home in your nice, comfortable couch, go get some popcorn, not have to pay the prices.
Yeah.
West Coast fans just don't want to go right now, and it's an uphill battle. Arizona's doing a good job of fighting that, but it will be a never-ending battle right now with just how social media is.
And quickly, you talked a little bit about the Big 12, where we would be projected for football. And quickly, Troy, how about basketball next year?
Basketball is a little bit blurry because that is going to be a tough conference yeah. for basketball.
Yeah.
I'm sure Arizona will be very good, but you have Kansas, Baylor. There's talk about Gonzaga and UConn coming to the Big 12 right before the start of the season. So you have a gauntlet of teams.
Yeah.
It's going to be the best.
It's going to be a top basketball conference in the
Houston's
country.
Houston's in that too. Cincinnati's yeah. very good. It's going to be the best basketball conference since the old school Big East, and maybe even on par with that.
All right, Troy Hutchison. GoAZCats.com. How can people subscribe to that, Troy?
Yeah, so go to GoAZCats.com. Again, it's part of the Rivals Association of Networks. Just click the link. You can create an account there and sign up for our message boards. It is $10 a month, but it gives you premium access to all things Arizona athletics, from inside information to recruiting to coaching searches to what's going on campus. We got it all covered at GoAZCats.com.
Very good, Troy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, that's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Troy Hutchison and Tom, on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing the show, be back with you in about 23 hours. We'll do it again.